Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And welcome to Unity Center of Light. Those of you who know we have a guest speaker are probably surprised to see us. But we've been put on tech duty for today, so that's why we're here. I'm Reverend Millage Mosby for those on YouTube who don't know who I am.
And I'm Pamela Mosby.
Yeah. And it's our pleasure to be here with you today. And we're going to let Pamela open us up.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Unity Center of Light, a spiritual community that nurtures the growth of all who are seeking to develop the potential of their spirit, mind, and body. Please join me as we affirm our mission and foundation statements together. Let's begin with the mission statement. The mission of Unity Center of Light is to empower individuals to express their indwelling divine potential. We teach there is a power within each of us far greater than anything that exists outside of us. Now let's affirm our foundation statement together. There is only one power and one presence active in my life and affairs, God the good, omnipotent. Amen. And now we'll have the daily word reading with Christine.
Good morning, Unity Center of Light. Today's daily word is grace. Grace blesses my life in every way. If I'm feeling overwhelmed or find myself in the midst of conflict, I don't need to struggle. Grace, the ceaseless activity of divine love, is mine to claim. This infinite resource of spirit carries me through even the most challenging circumstances. It is expressing in my life right now. I need not earn grace. It is never withheld. Just as water flows when I turn the tap, saying yes to grace is all I have to do for divine love, life, love, wisdom, and strength to flow freely to every part of my life. Centered in grace, I am at peace. My thinking is clear, and I possess ample understanding, compassion, and insight. Drawing from this divine gift, I bring harmony and joy to my relationships. I move forward with renewed confidence, energy, and efficiency. And from 2 Corinthians 12:9, he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness."
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Christine.
And now we'll have the Sunday message with April May.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm really glad we're having a Sunday message with April May. Take it away, April.
Well, good morning, everybody. Today is for all of you who forgot that I was talking today and showed up anyway. Are there all those people who love and support me and showed up here because I begged you to, or because you just wanted to be loving and supportive? This is a subject today that's dear to my heart. And I'm just gonna ask you if you could join me today in an exploration of everyday mysticism. Is it for everybody? I'm not sure whether there's anybody on today's Zoom that doesn't know me, but for those of you who may not, my name really is April May. I didn't make that up. My mother got all the credit for that. And I wasn't born in either one of those months. Actually, I was born in March. So March, April, May. And even though my middle initial is J, it doesn't stand for June, July, or January. So I just thought I'd get those out of the way so you weren't wondering about it if you didn't already know. So when I was growing up in my family, they always called me the why kid. Why was my question for everything and everybody. I always wanted to know more. I always wanted to know why. And I also had a hunger for experiencing everything. Can you guys hear me okay this morning? Okay. I can tell you that why definitely got me in some scrapes in my life. It's not always helpful or useful to know why about things. But it also urged me on to study and experience wisdom teachings from ancient religions and traditions all over the world, including my own Native American roots. I loved and I sought out knowledge for the sheer joy of acquiring it. My mother always used to say, "No one can take away from you something that you've learned." And I got actual pleasure out of the acquisition of that learning. But I discovered over time what I was really, really hungry for.
Much audio.
What I discovered that I was really, really hungry for was some sense of secret knowledge.
I did hear you may be able to.
Transformation in my life, or a sense of knowing beyond what we think of as traditional kinds of knowing. I wanted mountaintop experiences. I wanted timeless interludes. I wanted transformative experiences. I was certainly no Joan of Arc, but my divine discontent really pushed me to aspire to be like the people I read and learned about, Teresa of Avila, St. Francis of Assisi, and even more contemporary mentors such as Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, or even Fred Rogers. Looking up the definition of a mystic or mysticism wasn't all that helpful because it spoke about experiences of ecstasy or altered consciousness, becoming one with God, being part of the absolute. There was a focus on things like vows of poverty, living in a cave or being in an ashram or renouncing worldly connection. Like most of us, what my life looked like at the time was going to school, creating relationships, working for a living, and forging my way in the worldly world. Didn't really sound like me to renounce the world, be on the side of a mountain and wear a loincloth. Just wasn't me. Over time, what I came to understand was that my longing was for mystical experiences, but in the context of everyday living. And what I was hearing and seeing in written literature and in definitions of mystics and mysticism didn't seem to encourage or support that as being highly possible. As a matter of fact, a lot of things that I read that said, "Do you think you're a mystic?" said, "You probably aren't." And that was discouraging and it was frustrating over time because there was a deeper longing for me. So what was this divine discontent within me that kept me seeking and curious? Well, Einstein said, "I have no special talent. I am only passionately curious." I certainly had that curiosity in abundance, and it seemed like a great start. So I began to embrace the idea that my curiosity could help keep me open to mystical experiences, even in everyday lived experience. So I shifted from the why kid to the how would I foster it and how would I know it when I saw it or I felt it. Have you ever wondered if you're a mystic? Traditional wisdom, again, tells us probably not. But that approach felt limited and confusing to me. If mysticism really is the direct knowledge of spiritual truth or ultimate reality through subjective experience, how can it be that it's not possible for all of us? I believed setting the intention itself to be open to the revelation of everyday mysticism would increase my capacity for and experience of it. And that was when the journey truly began in earnest. I'd like to share an experience for you that began to crystallize this for me. It was 2001, and I was working at Unity by the Bay, which we used to call Unity Behind the Bowling Alley. And the phone rang. A woman was calling to get a referral to a counselor or a therapist. I went through my Rolodex. Yes, there were still Rolodexes in those days. And I gave her two contacts to reach out to. Now, I'll admit, I felt a little proud that I was being of service and being able to help her. But a voice inside of me said, that is not enough. I felt maybe there was something else she needed or wanted that she wasn't directly asking for. So I took a deep breath. I paused and I heard myself saying, would you like me to put you on our prayer list? I could feel a catch in her voice as she said, that would be nice. So I did that and I still felt the voice inside me saying, that is not enough. So I took another deep breath, paused again, and asked the woman, would you like me to pray with you now? Well, I don't know if you can feel the catch in my voice right now. I still feel it after all these years. But it was a mystical moment for us both. Time seemed to stop. She realized that prayer was really what she needed. And I realized that I didn't need any special training or credentials to be available in prayer with someone else. My logical, rational mind would not have offered that possibility. But by stopping and pausing and speaking from spirit, I don't even remember what our prayer was that day, but it touched us both. This reinforced for me that one of the conditions for me to foster in seeking mysticism was that willingness to pause, breathe, be still, and listen. It also reminded me and it recommitted me to my own personal practices of prayer and meditation. That experience also reminded me that I was still wanting to learn and grow, and that was when I began my studies to become a licensed Unity teacher. I was still very interested and excited about feeding that curious part of me, and it was still important and part of my path to mysticism. So about 6 months or so later, I was having a conversation with a friend named George Law. Some of you may remember him. His entire family was at Unity by the Bay at the time, and I always called them the family of the spiritual laws. And George and I were having a conversation, and I was sharing with him my drive to want to balance being a person who had a lot of tasks in life, who was asked to do a lot of things, with this desire for the mystical. There always seemed to be another thing to be done, and it seemed like the tasks to be done could interfere with my embrace of the mystical. And he said to me, April May, I consider you a task mystic. You always get the task done, but you never forget the reason for the task in the first place. To be of service. I love that idea of reframing that task and mysticism could coexist and actually even support each other. And since then, the idea of service as a path to the mystical experience has been part of my approach. Maybe it was possible to be an everyday mystic after all. Over the years since then, many other opportunities have presented themselves to me to more fully illustrate the path of the everyday mystic. I began to shift not only from the why kid to the how to do it to the what. Now the questions I ask myself is, what is mine to be and do to foster the mystical experience? And what I've discovered is there are some things we may want to consider if we're interested in embracing everyday mysticism, and whether it's for me, whether it's for you, or whether it's for any of us. I'd like to explore those thoughts just a little bit, and I ask you just to entertain if these are ideas that you're willing to spend some time with. It's important when embracing the idea of mysticism to remember that this experience of divine union is a gift and to be grateful for it. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when I have great experience, I go, oh, I want to do that again. Can I do that again? I had a great meditation. Can I do that again? I don't know that we can grasp it, but we can open our hands to receive it and be open and grateful. Another thing that I think that's important in embracing in seeking mysticism, should we choose to, is that to be remembering always that mysticism is an experience of wonder. It can be hard to explain. You may not have felt what I did when I was talking about the prayer story with the woman who called, but I can conjure that feeling up just by telling the story. It can leave you breathless. It can actually stop you in your tracks. And what I'm learning, and I invite you to entertain, is to allow yourself to be stopped in your tracks. Don't do the, I don't believe that. That can't be true. It doesn't seem logical. Sink into it. Allow yourself to enjoy the experience of being stopped in your tracks. Wallow in the breathlessness for whatever amount of time it wants to be with you. Take your time. Another thought we may want to embrace, and that's important to our growth, just in consciousness in general, but especially in seeking the mystical experience, is to honor and keep your commitments to your spiritual practice. That was a place where for me, I felt like I went from 0 to 60 when I really, truly committed and honored that commitment. I reminded myself that when I break my word to me, it doesn't matter if I keep my word to everybody else. I've started with not keeping my word to myself. That may look different for different people. It could be prayer and meditation. It could be chant. It could be immersion in nature. Whatever it looks like to you, and whatever it looks like to me, is what works. Our mysticism, our mystical journey, is transformational, and it really is seeking fertile ground to grow in. And our spiritual practices prepare us for that transformation to occur and for us to be able to assimilate it. Not only Jesus, but most mystics took the time to go apart, to go into the wilderness or the top of the mountain to spiritually prepare. Considering setting time apart for our spiritual practices, making an appointment, is something we may want to entertain. We also want to take a look at respecting our divine discontent and recognizing that it's an urging from spirit for something to be expressed in, through, and as us in the world. I recall the very first therapist I ever worked with, I was sharing with her that I was experiencing anxiety. And she said, oh, good. And I'm like, good? Doesn't feel good. She said, anxiety is simply reminding you that something wants to shift and change. And divine discontent is that way as well. Sometimes we want to push it away or say it's not of God, or why am I dissatisfied? It's a divine intervention. It's behind our impulse to learn and grow. And as we change ourselves, we also change the world. Mystics understand that their inner connection and intuition are derived from within, and the longing of discontent is merely a messenger, although a valuable one, a messenger. Entertain the idea that mysticism asks us to value our connections and our relationships, but to also recognize that the inner reality is the ultimate authority in our life. Mystics value experiences above all else, those with others and those within. We should ask ourselves, I heard someone say recently before the election, value your vote and vote your values. I think that applies to a lot more than voting. Mystics embrace divine order and realize that nothing occurs without reason and purpose. And they welcome those experiences. Nurturing an attitude of gratitude for everything is critical. A number of years ago, we studied a book called The Prayer Chest by August Gold. Some of you may remember it. And he said over and over again, you must be grateful for everything. Everything, even the stuff we don't like. Embracing divine order also means being willing to become comfortable with being uncomfortable and allowing that to unfold. I don't know about you, but oftentimes I find myself thinking, oh, I need to do something about that. I need to fix something about that. And not that that isn't the appropriate response sometimes, but this willingness to allow it to unfold positions us to have a different experience of being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Now, I'm certainly not advocating that we don't listen to the butterflies in our stomach, but we don't necessarily want them to drive the bus, right? Last Sunday, Reverend Butch made reference to the quote from Shakespeare, which says, "There is no good or bad, but thinking makes it so." My personal way of connecting to that idea is the worst things that ever happened to me are some of the best things that ever happened to me. When I can fully embrace that, I feel more whole and in alignment, and often the mystery of the experience is revealed to me. True mystics are not generally seekers of dogma, doctrine, or hierarchy. They recognize the intrinsic worth of all beings and they honor all paths to God. Because of their connection with everyone and everything, mystics are often humble and more concerned with understanding, compassion, and love than with authority or with power. Although they do value highly the type of power that comes under the auspices of dominion over oneself, as opposed to power over others. Mystics know that they don't know everything. They acknowledge that the universe is infinite and mysterious and far too complex for our human minds to fully comprehend sometimes. They don't know everything, and they know that they don't know everything. They enjoy reaching out, learning new things, hearing new perspectives, and they see their journey as one of understanding. The mystic recognizes that by virtue of their gift of mysticism, they are more responsible for themselves and others in the world, and thereby are natural leaders. Parker Palmer said, "A leader is a person who has an unusual degree of power, in its true sense, to create the conditions under which other people live and move and have their being. Conditions that can be either as illuminating as heaven or as shadowy as hell. A true leader must take special responsibility for what's going on inside of his or her own self, his or her consciousness, lest the act of leadership create more harm than good." Now, you may ask yourself, in these chaotic, confusing, and the dreaded word challenging times, do we have the time, do we have the energy, do we have the enthusiasm for taking on this question? Are we a mystic? Is it possible for me? Is it possible for you? Is it possible for everyone? Or do we even want to be? This is not a list we've gone through that's about things to add to your to-do list. This is more about our to-be list. I'd like to leave you with these thoughts from a poem that was shared with me, "We Were Made for These Times." My friends, do not lose heart. We were made for these times. I've heard from so many recently who are deeply and properly bewildered. They are concerned about the state of affairs in our world. Ours is a time of almost daily astonishment and sometimes righteous indignation over the latest degradation of what matters most to civilized or visionary people. You are right in your assessments. The luster and hubris some have aspired to while endorsing heinous acts against everyday people, the poor, the unguarded, the helpless, is breathtaking. Yet I urge you, I ask you, to please not spend your spirit dry by bewailing these difficult times. Especially do not lose hope. Most particularly because the fact is, we were made for these times. Yes, for years we have been learning, practicing, been in training for, and just waiting to meet on this exact plane of engagement. She continues, "I grew up on the Great Lakes and recognize a seaworthy vessel when I see one. Regarding awakened souls, there have never been more able vessels in the water than there are right now across the world. And we are fully provisioned and able to signal one another as never before in the history of humankind. Look out over the prow of the boat. There are millions of boats of righteous souls on the water with you. Even though your veneers may shiver from every wave in the storm, I assure you the long timbers come from a great forest. That long-grained lumber is known to withstand storms, to hold together, to hold its own, and to advance. In any dark time, there is a tendency to veer toward fainting over how much is wrong or unmended in the world. Do not focus on that. There is a tendency, too, to fall into being weakened by dwelling on what is outside your reach, by what cannot yet be. Do not focus there. That is spending the wind without raising the sails. We are needed. That is what we know. And though we may meet resistance, we more so will meet great souls who will hail us, love us, and guide us, and we will know them when they appear. Wouldn't you say you are a believer? Wouldn't you say you pledged to listen to a greater voice? Didn't you ask for grace? Don't you remember that to be in grace means to submit to the voice greater? Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor suffering world, will help immensely. It is not given to us to know which acts or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward an enduring good. What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts. What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding more, and continuing. We know it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small determined group who will not give up during the first, second, or hundredth storm. One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. Soul on deck of the ship shines like gold in dark times. The light of our soul throws sparks, can send up flares, build signal fires, cause proper matters to catch fire. to display the lantern of our soul in shadowy times like these, to be fierce and to show mercy toward others, are acts of immense bravery and greatest necessity. Struggling souls catch light from our other souls who are fully lit and willing to show it. If you would help to calm the tumult, this is one of the strongest things you can do. There will always be times when we feel discouraged. I too have felt despair in my life, but I do not keep a chair for it. I will not entertain it. It is not allowed to eat from my plate. The reason is this: in my uttermost bones, I know something, as do you. It is that there can be no enduring despair when we remember why we came here, who we serve, and who sent us here. The good words we say and the good deeds we do are not just all our own. They are the words and the deeds of the ones who brought us here. In that spirit, I hope you will write this on your wall. When a great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe. There can be no doubt. But that is not what great ships are built for. Dr. Clarissa Pinkola is an American poet. She's a Jungian psychologist. She's a post-trauma recovery specialist, an author, and a spoken word artist. These words blessed me, they inspired me, and they contributed to my desire to embrace my journey of everyday mysticism. I invite you to consider these principles that we talked about today, and if it is yours to do, embrace it always. And so it is. Thank you very much. And now I'd like to invite us into a short time of meditation. And I ask you to prepare yourself as you feel comfortable doing. You can close your eyes should you choose. You can soften your gaze. And you can focus on your breath. Noticing your breathing, not forcing or pushing or trying to fix it, just noticing. Allowing your breath to fill those spaces in your body where you may be holding tension. And spend a moment in the silence with these ideas and these concepts, the ones that spoke to you, the ones that are older ideas, the ones that may be newer ideas to you. And let's take that shortest and longest journey from the head to the heart. As one of our contemporary mystics shared with us, Mother Teresa, there are no great acts, there are simply small acts of great kindness. And allow yourself in this space that we've created today to consider, to just consider what is mine to be and do, to show up fully in this world that we have created. And as you continue to breathe, allow yourself to sink just a little deeper into this reflection. And feel the energy of the other people sharing this meditation with you. And feel the power and the purpose and the mystery in that joined energy. And as you continue to breathe, allow yourself to know and to feel and to experience the joy of a commitment to the spiritual path, whatever that may look like for you. And now begin to allow your next few breaths to bring you more and more conscious and present this experience that you are having with your spiritual community. And when you're ready, only when you're ready, allow your breath to breathe your eyes open and see the beautiful shining souls of the people on these ships along with us. And so it is. Amen.
Thank you, April.
Yes.
You're gonna, you can turn the recording off now, right?
Yeah, that should stimulate a lot. Just want to share with the folks who will be watching this on YouTube that should share a lot of stimulation in the discussion that we're moving into now. So if you are watching this on YouTube and you really like to be involved in the discussion that we do in our fellowship, please check your e-newsletter or your weekly update on how you can join us each week in our Zoom. But for right now, so long to all the folks who are on YouTube, and we are moving into our fellowship.